You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, everyone. This is Mark Schaefer. Join me, Mitch Joel, Tom Webster, and so many others at this fall's Social Brand Forum in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Every person who attends will get a free copy of my new book, The Content Code. Learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com. Can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Steve Levine. Steve is Vice President of U.S. Strategy and Insights for McDonald's USA. He's responsible for integrating consumer, business, and industry insights into actionable plans to help drive the U.S. business. His contributions in these areas have helped McDonald's strengthen their industry-leading position and realize their most successful period in their history. His career spans 30 years of demonstrated leadership, creating value through brand building and performance improvement, including roles at McDonald's and Midas International. While at McDonald's, he has earned many awards and recognition. Among them is the Eagle Award, given annually to one U.S. officer that demonstrates outstanding contributions to the brand. Steve holds a bachelor's degree from Northern Illinois University and a master's degree from Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, with an emphasis in marketing and management. In addition, he is an alumni of McDonald's Global Leadership Development Program, an executive development course offered to select employees. He is a frequent speaker at universities and at industry events across the country, including the first ever Social Brand Forum here in Iowa. He also serves as an advisory board member for Cornell University's School of Hospitality Research and the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa. Steve, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you, Nick. Great to join you here today.
So what did we miss in the big history of Steve Levine?
I think you hit it all. I think aside from that, my other role is, husband and father. And that seems like my other full-time job.
That is certainly good sized. I know from experience there. But in all of this, how did you first come to McDonald's?
You know, I had about 8 years experience in another franchise organization, as you mentioned, Midas International. And as I was nearing my end of that 8 year career, I actually answered an ad or got recruited to come to McDonald's. And McDonald's, for somebody with a marketing background and a research background, was always the pinnacle, always the top brand, the top marketing company, the top brand company at the time. And it was just a great fit. And again, I think from McDonald's perspective, my experience in the franchising arena really, really was attractive. And again, my background, as you mentioned, master's degree and bachelor's degree in marketing and then management, I think that's how we sort of hooked up. And it's been great ever since.
So you hit the nail on the head. I mean, what's it like kind of getting handed the keys to such a legendary American brand? I mean, you think big brand, and that's where you go.
Yeah, it's an awesome responsibility, and I got to tell you, it's been a blast. It's been a lot of fun. So everything you can imagine in terms of being associated with one of the top brands in the world is true. It's fun. There's always things that are changing and happening. It's a very dynamic environment, and again, it's an awesome responsibility to not only take the brand from where it was, but to continue to elevate it in an environment that's changing so rapidly. So that's sort of what keeps my energy level up. There are always things that are happening that are changing. And just that challenge, that continuous challenge of trying to take the brand to another level is exciting for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, in thinking about that, you know, I'm sure the answer is a lot of things, but, you know, how has the brand changed since your time there?
Yeah, I tell you, in the 22 years I've been here, the brand has changed a lot. It's gone through periods of ups and downs. It's gone also through a lot of changes in the management structure, and management culture. When I first arrived at McDonald's, there was a feeling that we're number one. We've been number one. We know what we're doing. We really don't have to look at competitors. We really don't even have to talk to consumers. We know what works. The company was built by people that really had an operations background and really were smart about that. And that was at the beginning of my 22-year career. Obviously, since then, things have changed rapidly. We've evolved into a company that's very consumer-focused, that's very aware of the industry, the environment, the competition, because it puts into context what the consumer choices are. So we've evolved tremendously from a company that was always number one, that was sort of managing by intuition, which that intuition was right more often than it was wrong back then. But out of necessity, we've evolved to much more detailed, much more scientific, much more consumer-focused strategies.
You know, it's interesting you talk about that, and I was thinking about your title itself, which has always intrigued me. You talk about strategy and insights, and that's literally in your title. So, what's that look like from your perspective? What's on your desk?
It's all about understanding the consumer, again, understanding the environment in which we're operating in, and providing those insights from the consumer and turning those into strategies. So what are the actions? What are the strategies that we're going to employ based on the insights that we see? We do a lot of research. We do a lot of digging. I've got a lot of quantitative people on my team. I've got people that talk to consumers every day. As we look at that and we put it in the context of macro trends and some of the other big things that are happening, not only in the restaurant industry, but in society as a whole, it helps inform what we need to do. So that's how we sort of mesh together the insights or the traditional research approach to turn it into action plans or strategies to keep moving the brand in the right direction.
I remember when you spoke at our conference a few years ago, and I'd never kind of connected those dots, like you said, of McDonald's being, you know, kind of the brand that everyone kind of aspires to work with. And you think about the size and scope, but then you talk about, you know, one of the biggest things and what you talked about changed, you know, being focused on those consumer insights. But what you said that day was you talked about if you actually start listening and start collecting all that data, that's a ton of information, isn't it?
It sure is. I mean, at the time when we spoke at that conference, we were talking about McDonald's being mentioned in social media, you know, once every minute, I believe it was back then. Well, now it's once every second. I mean, there's always McDonald's being mentioned in the social media world. And when we combine our social media listening analysis with our traditional research and our traditional touch points with consumer, we are bombarded with information on McDonald's. The trick is, how do you sift through it? How do you make sense of it? And how do you use it to point you in the right direction?
Well, I think that's kind of the, you know, we see the headlines every day about big data. And I think that it's not as remarkable to have all this data. It's kind of the next step, what you're talking about, and probably, you know, your version of this challenge is as big as any. But, I mean, it's kind of easy to nod along and say, yep, then we'll translate that into actionable strategies. But how do you kind of separate the signal from the noise and all that?
It's a great question. And it's just from, you know, years of trying, years of failing, years of seeing what works, there's a lot of noise out there. And, you know, even within social media, and we use several tools to help us understand what's the sentiment, you know, versus, you know, what's sort of a joke. I mean, you know, for years we would come across comments online that says things like, you know, Big Mac is the bomb. Well, traditional software would take that and say that's a negative. That's a negative sentiment. But when you get underneath it, it was really a compliment for the Big Mac. So over the past 4 to 6 years, we've really been going back and forth and trying to separate and codify as much as we can what people are saying, what it means, and then again, what direction we need to go.
So in looking at kind of some of those directions that are out there, I mean, what are some of the what are you seeing in terms that you can share of the macro trends?
Yeah, I'll tell you a couple of things that are really at the top of our radar list. This notion that brands and companies need to be more transparent. So transparency is one of these uber trends that we noticed, 3 to 5 years ago, but it's becoming louder and louder. Transparency in your brand, transparency in your products, and how you operate. That's a big one. Underneath that is sustainability practices and several other things that really ladder up to what type of a corporate citizen are you, which then gets translated into strength of brand. So we are using that and using that as sort of the screen or criteria for how we do our planning going forward. And it's something that the volume is being turned up. As I mentioned, we talk to consumers every day. The volume on things like transparency, sustainability, good corporate citizens, those things are being ratcheted up every day.
So are there things that present themselves as challenges that you see? I mean, obviously there'd probably be some challenging sides to what you mentioned, but are there challenges, hurdles that you see kind of in the path ahead?
Yes, we've got, as a company, as a brand, we've got several challenges, a couple of different ones. One is, you know, consumers are changing. They're changing in what they're demanding, not only from food or restaurant companies, but what they're demanding from companies. That's the biggest one. Within our own industry, what's changing is the environment, the number of competitors, the way that people can interact with food. The days of just going out to a traditional restaurant are over. You know, people consume food at different places. Think of, you know, years ago, if somebody told you were going to eat customized food at a convenience store, you would have the visions of a 7-Eleven and sort of those roller dogs that were rolling around for hours. But they've really come a long way, and they've really upped their game on not only the beverage part, which everybody is familiar with, but on customizable foods in convenience stores, grocery stores with all the prepared foods, you know, gas stations. I mean, there are all kinds of things now and ways for people to get food away from their home versus, you know, 10 years ago. So that's another big hurdle for us. You know, the changing expectations of consumers and the changing environment in which we're operating in.
The changing environment too. I mean, those are two pretty big pieces there.
Correct.
You know, it kind of makes me think of the consumer changing too. And I thought this is a really random thing to bring up, but I was on a flight recently and was without reading material. And I turned to my, I think it was Delta In-Flight magazine, and read about branding initiatives targeted around hipster consumers. And there was the article made a reference to, I don't know if it was in the U.S. or if it was one of the international units of McDonald's, but it talked about, I think, a cafe called The Corner that was a learning lab to experiment with some of those new approaches.
Absolutely. The corner is actually a concept that's being pioneered in Australia.
Yeah.
And the idea there is to really get to that, as you mentioned, the hipster generation, to really look at that traditional sort of cafe approach and look at different foods, different beverage options that are not necessarily associated with McDonald's. And even within that concept, there are references to McCafe, our McCafe products, but it's not overtly McDonald's. It's the corner. And throughout the world, I can tell you that we're experimenting with different things like that, because it gets to a couple of different things. It gets to how far can you stretch the McDonald's brand? Can you stretch it so far as to include everything from hamburgers and fries to different types of cafe foods to different types of beverages? Or does your portfolio look at different types of concepts that hit those different segments and those different need states? It's one thing we're experimenting, you know, not only in Australia, but Europe and you know, soon in the U.S.
Yeah. It was interesting because I thought – you know, that might it's that experimentation is one way in which you know, the like you said, the maybe a challenge of the McDonald's brand of trying something out without people necessarily viewing it through that McDonald's lens too.
Absolutely. And years ago, we owned Chipotle. Now, there was never a design to say we're going to turn this into McDonald's or we're going to brand McDonald's within Chipotle. It was all about how do I provide resources that McDonald's, you know, brings to bear in distribution, supply chain, marketing, and help Chipotle expand. And while we've since sold Chipotle several years ago, it was that idea of when we look at our portfolio, can you have different concepts underneath the broader umbrella, you know, that will allow you to target different customers, different need states, you know, without having to be underneath the McDonald's umbrella per se.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, I like that idea of a learning lab. You know, with that size and scope, you know, you talk about the volume being turned up and, you know, both the volume in terms of the amplification, but also the volume, the mass quantity of all of the insights coming at you. Overall, how is, because I think about all this in the context of the learning lab scenario, but is change hard? Somewhat loaded question, I know.
Absolutely, change is hard, and change for a brand our size is even harder. One of the things I mentioned is as our management structure has evolved, so has our appetite for change. When we look at the dynamic nature of the environment, of the competitive set, we are being forced to change at a much more rapid pace than we are used to, or probably that we're comfortable with. But, you know, with change and the need to change is going to come less comfort and more risk. And I think, you know, the management team here is really embracing that. And while it is difficult to turn, you know, 14,000 restaurants in the U.S. overnight, I can tell you that over the past 2 or 3 years, we are moving much quicker on change, on innovation, on different things we need to accelerate the brand.
Well, it's interesting, too. You talk about change and you talk about the brand, and you mentioned previously kind of how far you can stretch the McDonald's brand. How do you balance, you know, all of this change in terms of the consumer, in terms of the environment in which it's all happening, and also what makes McDonald's McDonald's, and how do you avoid kind of throwing the brand out with the bathwater?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I can tell you that when we look at sort of this brand fit and the brand fit in the eyes of the consumers, and again, we talk to consumers every day, we've done all kinds of tests over the years. In fact, 15 years ago, we tested pizza. We tested, you know, come to McDonald's, get a pizza and sit down and enjoy it with your friends. Now, when we did blind taste tests with our pizza and other pizzas, it always scored at or above others on quality. When we actually then put it into restaurants and talked to consumers, they said, I don't come to McDonald's for pizza and I won't come to McDonald's for pizza. It's nice to know you have it, but I come to McDonald's because it's a place I enjoy to get my favorite type of food. If I really want a good pizza, I'm going to go elsewhere. So that brand fit is something that we are constantly looking at. And yes, people's taste palates are changing, but it's still a matter of how far can you stretch the brand on food, on what happens in a restaurant, and then what is really something that should be in other types of avenues, whether it's a different concept, as you mentioned, the corner or some of the other ones that we're testing. That's something that we wrestle with and really deal with every day.
That brand fit concept is really interesting. And in thinking of that, is there any – I'm also fascinated. I think branding in general, you know, business, you know, large like McDonald's or small – I think it's hard to get your arms around something as nebulous as branding sometimes is. You know, as you look at things like fit, is there something, you know, are there tangible pieces that you point to as kind of your keystone, your compass for knowing that's who we are? At the end of the day, it's this.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you know, McDonald's has a heritage around families, certainly kids, and good food delivered in a convenient environment at a good value. I mean, we use that as sort of the compass. So anything that violates that basic premise is not something that we investigate under the McDonald's umbrella. Certainly, we want to be relevant to other consumer segments, other types of initiatives in food. But at the heart, that's how the brand was founded. That's what we will remain true to the brand. We always use that as sort of our North Star as we're trying to evolve the brand. The brand has to evolve, but we cannot take it from one side of the pendulum all the way to the other side of the pendulum. The consumer will not allow it.
Yeah, and it all gets back to fit too, and exactly kind of the playpen that you set up, the boundaries earlier too of the changing consumer. And the environment as well. I keep thinking about the strategic level that you're at, but also thinking about things in the trenches of frontline employees. And I know that in the service business in general, you see a lot of tough conversations about these really big things, happening at a bigger national level, but at the service level, in the front lines, making sure that all of that hard work isn't undone, that it's reinforced. Have you had some conversations on service?
Absolutely. Part of the screening that we have as we're testing new ideas and concepts is how does this fit with our operational process in the restaurant? How does this fit with our people in the restaurant? Because it's not real. And there's a saying that we have around here, it's not real until it's real in the restaurants. And so we could have, a product or a concept that scores off the charts in traditional consumer research. But if there's no way to do it in the restaurant, it's just not real. A great example. So you've probably read about the testing we're doing now with All Day Breakfast in San Diego. And for years, for all of my 22 years, as we're doing research, one of the top questions and one of the top requests we get is, why can't I get breakfast beyond 10:30 in the morning? And so as we've approached this several times over my tenure here, the issue has always been operationally, it's not feasible. It's too hard to have a breakfast platform and a what we call a regular menu or after lunch platform going at the same time. And so as we've evolved over the years, we've evolved with some efficiencies, and actually we're testing sort of a limited breakfast menu after 10:30, but it's ongoing after 10:30. And it's much easier now in the restaurants than it would have been 10 years ago. It's a good example of making sure that big ideas from a consumer perspective work in the restaurant and work with our people, because the people in the restaurant have to be able to deliver it and deliver it effortlessly or it doesn't work.
So, you know, I also think back to all of the, you know, signal to noise, all of the things that you're listening for that you hear. You know, in this day and age, you know, so many are concerned, you know, when there is a red flag, when there is something that, you know, beyond insights and conversation that, you know, oh, this is a big problem. How, I mean, that would be in terms of everything you have to listen for, which again, I would imagine that you have lots of great listening tools, but in terms of what you're listening for, how do you pull out some of those red flags that, I mean, all the way down from things that might be a small, you know, more on the micro level, a customer service challenge, complaint, all the way up to something that this is a four alarm, you know, corporate communications emergency. How does that listening happen?
Yeah, so part of our listening, we monitor every second of every day the chatter on social media, Twitter. We have a Facebook page, obviously. We're listening every second of every day with internal folks and some of our vendor partners to listen to conversations and to understand what's being said. There are filters, there are screens that once conversations elevate to a certain level, you know, we step in and we'll take them offline. A great example would be if somebody is having conversations on Twitter. In fact, something like this happened where they said, you know, I was at this restaurant down the street here and my chicken sandwich wasn't cooked. It was red. It was disgusting. Blah blah blah. That gets elevated right away because that is a food safety concern. Food safety is almost at the top of our list for red flags that we jump into right away. We have a team of people that immediately contact the restaurant and the person that has initiated this conversation to track that down. So food safety is at the top of our sort of red flag list. Some other things that are at the red flag list, if there are inappropriate things that happen in restaurants with either crew or managers, you know, those get elevated to the top, and we have processes in place that address and rectify those immediately. So in the course of our listening conversations, blending social media listening with our traditional, what you might consider a customer satisfaction, we have an 800 number. When we blend all those things together, we have those screens and those red flags that we immediately address.
So what role does kind of, I would think a byproduct of all of this gets into, you know, reputation management, brand reputation online? How is that managed, bolstered from things digital?
It's critical. And we have a partnership with our department. So our strategy and insights group has a partnership with our marketing, our communications teams, and also our ad and PR agencies that all work together to manage conversations, to manage how we're engaging online, how the brand is represented, and all with the idea and with the objective of, you know, protecting first and then advancing the brand. So over the past 3 to 5 years, we've increased our resources in this area. We've hired a few more agencies. We're even starting a new digital team here that their sole focus is all about helping to manage that brand reputation and protect that brand reputation online. Again, in concert with our marketing, communications, and agency partners.
Well, you know, that's really interesting too, because, you know, I think it, again, back down the food chain, so to speak, to organizations of other sizes, you know, it's certainly a challenge organizationally in terms of who owns the brand. Of course, it serves everyone. And I think that kind of, like you said, that partnership between those areas is crucial, because sometimes, you know, you've got people, I can't do that because of, you know, various fiefdoms. But I think especially a brand bigger than any singular department is especially the case there.
It absolutely is, Nick. And actually, early on in this process, when I go back about 5 years, we almost had the opposite thing happening, which we would have one or two individuals who thought it was their role to sort of manage that brand reputation online and inject, you know, their own sort of thoughts and feelings. And very quickly, we sort of corralled that and said, wait a minute, this is a joint partnership. And we formed this team that was cross-functional to say, here's how that's going to be managed. Here's who's going to take the point on different conversations. And this is how we ladder up to our objective. Because it was a little bit, I got to be honest, in the, you know, 5+ years ago, it was a little bit like the Wild West out there in social media land. And, you know, we'd have individuals who may be a little more savvy than others and were going down the path of, you know, trying to manage everything themselves, not with ill intentions, but, you know, we had to manage all that. And we were learning that thing as we went along, and we're in a much better place today than when we started out 5 years ago.
Well, I think that's interesting. So this cross-functional group, are they, do different of those you know, team members of those groups represented? Are different teams lead on different things?
Yes, there may be different topics or areas that one would specialize versus another. You know, if it's a menu-related conversation, you know, maybe our marketing and menu folks would take the lead on that. If it's more of a sort of a corporate reputation piece, the communications folks may take the lead on it. So while they may own different aspects of it, everybody comes together as one team to say, here's how, in general, we're going to manage the conversations and we're going to approach the engagement online.
So what about global brand management?
Yes, that's, a big thing now. So the U.S. was really out in the forefront of a lot of this, you know, digital work, the social media work. But our global team now has grown, and we're now integrating much of what we started in the U.S. with other areas of the world that all get sort of centralized under this new global digital team, which, again, gets linked with marketing, with communications especially. So our global presence is increasing now, I would say, over the past 2 to 3 years. And, the U.S. was much further ahead, but now we're all integrated into this thing, because it's a brand objective, and now we're all aligned on it.
So beyond things digital, is there a larger version of kind of that cross-functional partnership that you discussed earlier, in terms of, you know, how different can McDonald's Canada, Australia, anywhere else be, and how, you know, where, How is kind of the overall fit for the various markets managed there?
Yes, we have a term here. It's called freedom within a framework. So the framework is established globally, and then the freedom is each individual country or area of the world has the freedom to operate within that framework. So what may be particular to Canada, Canada gets to sort of have that freedom. Same thing with, you know, Europe, same thing in the U.S. But the framework is established globally. Here's the framework of how we're going to engage, how we're going to manage the brand online. And then you have the freedom locally to operate within that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good saying, freedom within a framework. I'm pretty sure, you know, I also teach marketing here at the University of Iowa. And as you say that, I'm fairly certain that there's probably a few McDonald's examples in the book. But one of them, you know, just about some of the various kind of different menu items in different regions throughout the world that still kind of fit into the overall Mc whatever structure.
That's right.
But it's exactly that, and I would think that that probably transcends many different frameworks too.
It does. It does.
So do you? And then I would think that that same compass, that family, convenience, value, is still kind of what's the North Star, within the freedoms of all of that as well.
That's correct, Nick. And what is, represented by family or convenience or value in a different part of the world is their own definition. They wouldn't necessarily use the U.S. definition for those three things, but overall, the brand, the heritage, the reputation has all been built around those things. In each area of the world, they customize it to, how do we represent families or how do we represent convenience? It may be different. In fact, in Europe, drive-throughs and all the things that we're used to here in the U.S. are not as prevalent. So they have a different definition of what's convenient and what's value. Some of the prices and some of the average checks in Europe are much different than in the U.S., but to them, that fits under that umbrella of value or convenience.
I didn't even think about the variable definitions globally of all of those things.
Yeah.
Every time any of this sounds easier, it gets much harder.
That's correct.
So, in thinking about the size and scope of all of this, do you have a kind of a quintessential, only at a brand of McDonald's size kind of story?
Oh, I've got several. I'll tell you one of my favorites. This is going back about 16, 17 years ago. One of the products that we were working on was called a shrimp salad. So it was actually a salad with shrimp in it, no surprise. But we had to stop development on it because if we were going to introduce this product in the U.S., as I mentioned, with 14,000 restaurants, back then we probably had 10,000, but it was still massive. If we were going to introduce this product, we would have single-handedly exhausted the supply of shrimp available in the U.S., and we would have caused the price of shrimp to skyrocket to unsustainable levels. So we had to make the decision to just shelve that product.
Wow. And so that would truly be an only at McDonald's with your footprint, would offering a brand new menu item totally change all commerce around shrimp.
Shrimp, that's right.
Well, that's, I thought that was kind of an out there question. I thought there's got to be something, but you delivered handily. Man, that is something. Well, you talk about sitting on, I know we both sit on the board of journalism and mass communication at the University of Iowa. You talk about Cornell and their School of Hospitality Research. We're obviously working around, a lot of young people today. What are some of the most important skills in thinking about, talking if Steve of today was talking to the Steve of tomorrow, coming out, looking at a brand like McDonald's, I think a lot of people would be curious on, what skill sets you're looking for there.
Yeah, in fact, we recruit and we hire all the time here, and as we're looking for people to come into the brand, we're looking for a couple of different characteristics. One, we're looking for people that are curious. As I mentioned, this brand and the environment we're in is very dynamic. Things are happening so fast here. We want people that are asking questions, that are looking for what's next, and how can I get underneath this? If you're a person, I tell somebody this all the time, if you're a person that comes into a company or an office and you have three or four things on your to-do list, and you don't get to check them all off and you get frustrated, you won't last here. We're looking for people, especially young people, that are curious, that are dynamic, that are used to sort of ebbing and flowing. And we find that those type of people who have that flexibility, that have that curiosity, bring more to the brand. And it really, as over the past 3 or 4 years, we've brought in several individuals like that. And what happens is they lend different perspective. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for a different perspective. It's one thing, you know, for a seasoned veteran like myself to be here and to give input. But to have somebody who's got a different perspective, who's challenging, who's looking ahead, that's really what we're looking for, that different perspective. So the young people of today, that's what I tell them. I say, you know, be curious. Don't be satisfied with status quo, or don't be satisfied with what worked yesterday, and continue to dig.
Yeah, I love that. Curiosity, definitely underrated.
Yeah.
But definitely very much in demand today. So as I said earlier, before we started chatting, we always close out by asking, you know, what's a brand that's made you smile? So...
Well, I tell you, there's a long list of brands that make me smile, but I want to share a story on the brand that makes me smile even today, and it's Ritz-Carlton. So in my travels, I travel quite a bit. I'm fortunate enough to have stayed in a few Ritz-Carltons, not every trip, because my expense account wouldn't allow it. But, you know, Ritz-Carlton has a reputation for service, and it's well-renowned. And I can tell you from experience that it, absolutely, they deliver on that every time I stay at one. But one particular story I want to share with you. Probably about 13 years ago, and I know this because my daughter just turned 5 at the time, and she's going to be 18. We stayed at a Ritz-Carlton on Amelia Island, Florida. And I was at a conference, but this conference, they've asked me to invite my family. So I invited my family. I have 3 girls. As you know, one is just graduating their University of Iowa, but my youngest at the time was 4, and her birthday was the next day, and she was going to turn 5 at the Ritz-Carlton. So on the morning of her birthday, I go to my meeting, and my wife takes the girls down to the beach at the Ritz-Carlton in Amelia Island. Beautiful resort, beautiful beach. So on the beach, she interacts with the employee who was getting everybody, you know, chairs and towels and everything. And so as the young man asked my wife how many towels, and she said, you know, 3 girls and the chairs. And she said, and do you have any beach toys? You know, my daughter's birthday is today. She'd love to, you know, play with some beach toys. So the young man, absolutely, I have those. Boom, let's sit you down here. And she just happened to mention her name, Kelly. Now, my wife gave the gentleman the room number for the towels and everything. So, long story short, when they came back from the beach, on the dresser in the hotel room was a birthday present. It was addressed to Kelly. He heard Kelly. The birthday present was addressed to Kelly. She opened it up. It was a beautiful Ritz-Carlton t-shirt, and it said, "Happy birthday, Kelly," you know, from Bob. And that just made such a huge impression, not only on my daughter, but my wife and myself. And it's obvious that Ritz-Carlton empowers their employees to do whatever it takes to make guests happy. And I'm sure they're empowered with a certain dollar amount to say, if you have to, you know, go out of your way to make them happy, here you go. And that just spoke volumes to me. Not only about that individual hotel, but about Ritz-Carlton in general. So every time I think of Ritz-Carlton, I think of that story, and it makes me smile.
Wow, that's absolutely making me smile. That they're not only empowered, but you also mentioned, you snuck in there, that he listened.
And he listened.
I think that, you know, we talk about it in the digital sense and how much we have to listen to, but it's really not that new of a thing either. It's something that, you know, good people, good businesses have been doing for quite some time too. And that's amazing.
It really is. And I'll just leave you with this, Nick. I mean, to me, as we look at the effect of a brand, or what's changed in branding, it's something like that. It's living the values and the principles of the brand and not just telling people how good you are. So the days of going on national TV and, you know, for bigger companies and bigger brands, just blasting the airwaves with, hey, look how great we are. Those are over. It's really about what do you stand for, but more importantly, how do you live it day to day? And I can tell you that in this example with Ritz-Carlton, they live it day to day, and that does more for their brand than any commercial I ever see on the television about Ritz-Carlton.
Totally, totally. Have to live it. Have to live it.
Right.
Steve, as we wrap up, is there any place where you would send people on? This is probably a no-brainer here. I'm guessing McDonald's.com. Is there anywhere else that we should point people to?
Yeah, I think that's the best place to start. You know, McDonald's.com, and from there you could go to several different places. You know, we have a Facebook page, obviously, a Twitter handle and everything, and we're very active in social media. So I would definitely point people McDonald's.com. Start there. And interact with the brand. As I mentioned, we're changing every day. We've come a long way from 5 or 6 years ago when we started all, of our social media and online stuff. So we're evolving every day.
Awesome. Well, Steve, thank you for spending some time and being on brand with us today.
Thanks, Nick. My pleasure.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our listeners and wanted to give a shout out to Sean Carpenter, who enjoyed our recent interview with Mark Schaefer. Thanks, Sean, for listening. Remember, if you like something on this show or another, be sure to give us a shout on Twitter, like McDonald's. We're listening. And be sure to use that hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find links to everything that we've talked about at BrandDrivenDigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, click that 5-star button, give the show a rating, drop in a couple sentences, give us a review. We'd love to hear what you think. Don't forget that this podcast is brought to you by our Brand Driven Digital event series. You can learn more about the industry-leading social brand forum and our other workshops and trainings over at Brand Driven Digital. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.